Welcome back on this Monday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. One of the things we've been talking about a lot today, the Suns' win over the Dallas Mavericks last night, 117-115. And joining us right now, somebody who had an awful lot to do with that win, Ricky Rubio, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. He joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Congrats on the big win, Ricky.
Thank you.
Well, first, tell me, when you guys got down 15, you never quit. You kept fighting back. You ended up taking the lead. But give me the thought process of a player when you're down 15, how you were able to fight back.
Well, I mean, you have to approach the same as when you're up 15. It's a 48-minute game, and you have to keep doing the right thing every time. And if you keep doing that, you're going to have a chance to really – get in the game, especially if you do the right things in defense. And I think in the third quarter we showed that the defense was the key, and then we could run and play basketball. We didn't do nothing special. We just play our game and the style that we want to play, and believe in the system. And I think we did, and it showed that when we do that, we have a chance to win every game.
Ricky, how difficult is it to play with so many of your teammates in foul trouble? DeAndre had 5 fouls. Book ended up fouling out of the game. Mikhail had 5 fouls. How tough is that to play when you've got guys that are in foul trouble?
It's tough, but then the bench came in and played a perfect game too, so that helped. That's the growth of this team. We've seen more depth, and that's huge for to play an NBA, to play an 82-game season. And it's something that we were looking for, and I think everybody is on the same page. And got to understand and learn from the mistakes we did. When you're in foul trouble, know how the game is called and try to, fix it.
How much, if at all, Ricky, do you change what you're trying to do individually when you see Booker on the side, when you see DeAndre on the side, and you know that it's you out there trying to put your will on this game? What do you do differently when you know you don't have those guys?
Well, I got to know the weapons who I have on the court. And when those two guys are out, I know I have to be more aggressive. I have to look more for my shot. And learning who and when to pass, but learning their skills. I know JC has been working a lot on his three-point shot. Cam is an excellent shooter. So I was trying to look for them too, but at the same time being aggressive on the pick and roll. Frank coming off a tough season when he got injured, and he's trying to get his rhythm back and get him a couple easy baskets so he can get in the game.
I know at times, Ricky Rubio, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, I know at times the bench play has been a little bit criticized for the Phoenix Suns. How gratifying do you think it was for them to basically provide the game's biggest moment in coming back from that deficit the way you guys did in the third quarter yesterday? How big was that for those guys in the second unit?
It was huge, but at the end of the day, we are a team. It's not about bench or starters. It's all of us, and we have to do our job. I know the bench sometimes come in the game, and it's hard for them to really find a rhythm if we're not setting things up for them. So it's about us as a team doing the right thing. And last night, they step up big. When we have foul trouble, they came in the game, and they didn't quit. They elevate the level of the game and win the game for us.
Ricky, when you look at Cam Johnson and Mikhail Bridges and the opportunity that those guys are getting, especially with Kelly out, do you see a difference in the way that they're playing right now compared to when the season ended?
Yeah, I see a lot of improvement, and that's huge. And that's why we are a young team, and we have a lot of room to improve. And we can see only 2-3 months, that it's not usually what an off season looks like. But we see a lot of improvement from Mikhail, from Cam, from Dario, a lot of guys who have a lot of room to really get and elevate their level, and with that elevate the level of the team and the success of the team.
What was your thought process coming into these 8 games? Was it to try to develop as a team and build chemistry, or was it to try to make the playoffs?
Trying to make the playoff always been our goal, but of course that's the end. We can't forget that it's a long season. Now it's only 8 games, but during the whole season, our goal was to make the playoff too. During this up and downs during the season, you have to have different goals too. And now our goal is play game by game. I know our chances are low or super low, but we are not going to quit. We're going to meet the opportunity with the right preparation, and that means play every game like it's the final game and grow with the team. Of course, you can do both at the same time. Have a goal of making the playoff, but at the same time, grow with the team. And games like yesterday, it really helps when you're down 15 and then come up with all the pressure that it's been, that if we lose a game, we probably out of playoff. So the pressure is extra over there. And we just play the game to really build that chemistry too.
Ricky Rubio joining us live from the bubble in Orlando. Suns beat the Mavs last night. Next up, they'll play the Clippers. You talked about exactly what I wanted to ask you about, and that's what a win like last night does for the overall energy level and confidence of your squad right now, because you're absolutely right. You guys are a long shot still to make the playoffs. How far does a win like last night go in bolstering the confidence that you might have in the internal belief that you guys can actually do it?
I mean, it's a huge win, but we have to use it the right way. Usually in a young team, a success early, it's using it in the wrong way, where we relax and we think we did what we had to do, and it's not enough. It's playing game by game, and the same thing if that shot from Hardaway would have gone in. We would have lost the game, and we just have to play our best every game and grow from there. We can't relax from having success, and we want more. It doesn't stop here.
I speak for myself on this one. I've spent a lot of time looking at what the other teams in a similar situation to you have done so far in the bubble. How much time have you spent looking at the Kings and the Pelicans and the Grizzlies and the Blazers, et cetera, to see what they've done so far since you guys have been there?
We do. We watch their games, and it's fun to see them lose. But at the end of the day, if we don't do our job, nobody's going to do it for us. So we have to win every single game and one game at a time. We started with Washington. We didn't play our best, but we still got the win. And last night, we did a poor job in the first half, but I think we came up big in the second. But we haven't done anything. There are 6 more games, and we go step by step. With all the teams losing, give us a little chance to really make the playoff, and even if we lose 1 or 2 games, but all we have to do is here is right now thinking about the Clippers. We know it's tough, but it's another game, and we have to approach it. We beat them in regular season already, and we know how to do it. We just have to execute.
Ricky, is one of the leaders and experienced players on the team, you could see Cameron Payne has played very well, and him and Javon Carter play very well together, their ability to press full court. I'm curious as to what do you say to a young player like Ty Jerome who's not getting the opportunity to play? What do you, as a leader, what do you say to him to keep him motivated?
Stay ready. Like I said, opportunity meet preparation, so we have to – everybody have to be ready when their name is called up to really help the team and be ready. This is a league where you're always going to have your opportunity. There's a lot of games. There is a lot of situations that happening and going on. Games that you're not supposed to go in, then you go in because an injury or because foul trouble, whatever it is. And if you perform and you do good, you're going to have another opportunity. So just be ready for that.
Ricky, last one for me. At the end of the game, they went with 2 3-pointers. They didn't try to play for overtime. They went for the win. Porzingis took a three with 3.2 seconds left. They got the ball back. Hardaway Jr. missed a three. Were you surprised that they were taking a three-pointer, or did you think that they would go with Luka having so much success getting to the basket to tie the score and go to overtime? What was your thought process on that?
Well, actually, Luka tried to go to the basket, but then Mikal really played good defense, and he kicked out to Porzingis, and DA closed out really well. And then, he had the chance to really get a pull-up or two, but I think they played overtime the other night, and they were trying to win. Based on being the seventh seed, they can go, actually, on the eighth seed, and for them it's hard because they lost against Houston the other night to go sixth seed, so... He's just trying to win the game, and it's fair.
Ricky, congrats on the good game. We appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you in the future. Good luck the rest of the time there in the bubble.
All right. Thank you.
It's Ricky Rubio joining us live from Orlando from the bubble here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We appreciate that. When we come back, though, the Arizona Diamondbacks, rocky start off to their season, but considering all of the circumstances of this strange season, how much time do they have to get things figured out, and when exactly is too late? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. The Arizona Diamondbacks, we saw a lot of thrilling things over the weekend. The Suns beating the Mavs last night, coming back from 15 down in the third quarter. The Coyotes, a 3-0 lead, a 4-1 lead, and then hanging on for dear life to take a 1-0 series lead in their best of five against Nashville. The Arizona Diamondbacks did not provide very many thrills, unless you count shaking your blood pressure medication into an open microphone as thrilling.
Woo!
That's
yeah. Kind of need that with the way the D-backs have played.
That's exciting. 3-7 on the season. They lose 3 of 4,
and it's so much better than that. And this is the part that they are. They're better. They're not a 300 winning percentage team. They're a much better team than that. And it sucks. It sucks to see their offense so bad, and it sucks to see their starting pitching having the issues they do. There's only 60 games in the season. For some teams, there may be 60. For others, there may be 50 or less. So it's a really, everybody said it. You can't have a bad start. You can't have a bad start. There's only 60 games. You can't have a bad start. They had a bad start.
Yes.
15% of their schedule is done and over.
Yes.
15% is over. And now, listen, there's no excuses. They don't have any injuries. They don't have any players out with COVID-19. They're not hitting. It's confusing to figure out why. And now you look at the schedule, 50 games left, and you wonder, have they done so much damage that they can't make it up over the 50 games?
The answer to that question for me is no. It's not like if we're looking for a drop-dead date when – okay, that's it. They're done. They're out. We certainly have not gotten there yet, right? After 10?
No, I don't believe so.
Even in a 60-game season, to think that – I just for fun, I just looked it up. I'm looking at the National League standings right now. The top 8 teams make it, right?
Yes.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They are 2 games back of the 8th best record.
How many teams ahead of them?
In the National League. Oh, a ton.
Between them and that spot, how many other teams are ahead of them?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That always is the major issue
to me. It is, but not this early in the season. Even in a shortened season, not this early in a season. There's still...
20 games? When you're a third of the season in?
As the point to say...
If there's that many teams still ahead of you, there is a point where you're
yes.
like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
There's a point where you decide to be a seller instead of a buyer at the trade deadline.
Of course.
The trade deadline's this month.
Of course. Look, I'm not used to thinking about things in terms of a 60-game season.
And neither are they.
And so...
And that's hard.
For me to tell you when that date is, I don't know. But I know when it's not. And it's not 10 games. You know what I mean?
We are all wired to ignore short samples, sample sizes in sports like this. We ignore it. A 10-game skid is nothing. 3-7 over 162 games is nothing. We're all wired that way. And it's hard now to look at 3-7 and realize that, wow, that's 15% of your schedule when normally it's, 1/16 of your schedule.
Right.
It's very difficult to do. Now, they've got to figure this out, and they got to play better baseball, or they're not going anywhere. Like I said, there's no excuses. But one of the things that should be a concern is that you may not have the games to make up on teams like the Phillies and the Cardinals and the Marlins. Those teams may not play 60 games. They may play 50. And if you end up losing games because you have to play one of these teams and they can't play you, something happens and you don't play 60 and you only play 50,
well, then you may lose the you may lose the opportunity to play catch up in the final 10 games.
Right, right. Okay, so put another way, we're assuming the Diamondbacks have played 10 of their 60 games. What if they've played 10 of 50 games? What if they've played 10 of 48 games, right?
And suddenly, what if the Cardinals and the Phillies only play 50?
Right.
And now it's based on winning percentage. Your winning percentage, you know, you don't have the luxury of them playing 10 more games and beating each other up or losing right. to other teams that are playing it's for something. I mean,
it's a fair point. I never really thought of it that way, but that's for a team that gets off to a poor start like this. Absolutely. That hamstrings the Arizona Diamondbacks. That handicaps the Arizona Diamondbacks because there are teams, and I assume there are going to be more when it's all said and done, right? I assume that there are going to be lots of the St. Louis Cardinals. Who knows when they're going to play again? The Miami Marlins, they're supposed to start again tomorrow against the Baltimore Orioles. I haven't seen one way or another where that series is going to happen.
Is that an expansion team?
Who?
Is that a new expansion team?
The Miami Marlins? Yes.
When did they come into play?
Well, I don't know.
I haven't heard of them for a while.
I know you got a text from their general manager about a half hour ago looking to see if you had any juice left in your arm to play second base. Torey Lovello says,
look, turn to double play.
He understands the urgency. He does not want it to be a trap, and I'll let him explain.
To look too far down the road, I think is a little bit of a trap. But you're right, we can't fall too far behind knowing that we are shortened up here. But I don't want us to lose hope. And I think our guys are going to continue to plow. And I know this group is going to accept any challenge in front of them and do their absolute best.
I don't think benching guys is going to be their answer. They are going to allow some of these players to work through it. Not all. But the Escobar, Peralta, Calhoun, these guys are going to be what are your options if you bench those guys? You don't really have any. So those guys are going to be given every opportunity to battle through. Now, the one guy who I think is going to suffer the most is Jake Lamb. Varsho could take at bats away as far as the DH is concerned. He's a left-handed bat, so he could take some of those at bats away from Jake Lamb. I actually expect that could be an issue here. Starting pitching is going to stay the same. The five guys they rolled out are going to stay the five guys they rolled out. Next in line is Alex Young, and then maybe at some point, but not close, would be Corbin Martin, who's up to two innings being pitched right now. That's the one area where I could see them really experimenting a little bit and giving Varsho some at-bats as the left-handed designated hitter.
Yeah. Tim Kirchen this morning on the Doug and Wolf Show. There's time for the Arizona Diamondbacks. There's no question.
It's a 60-game season and 10 games. Is the sixth of your season, and it hasn't gone well, but there's still time. The Rockies can't be this good. I love the Padres, but I'm not sure they're this good. But the Dodgers are better than they've played to this point. So the Diamondbacks are already in a little bit of trouble after a sixth of the season.
Yeah, they are. And again, yeah. I don't know when to be worried about the record. I mean, I'm worried about it now, but to your point earlier, when is it that point of no return? When do they cross some line where you go, okay, that's it. They're not gonna get in this, especially when it's expanded to eight teams the way it is. I don't know. In a 60-game season, I don't know where that point, especially when not everybody's playing 60 games.
The Phillies have played three games.
Yeah, they're one of the teams ahead of them.
They're ahead of them.
I know.
They're 1-2.
The Marlins have played three games. They're right. One of the teams ahead of them.
Yes. So the Phillies are 1-2, and they're ahead because of they're not going to play 60 games.
I'm not programmed to think about baseball like this.
Right. The Cardinals
are not programmed to think of baseball. I don't know.
So that's the thing I want to just put in people's mind. The Cardinals are 2-3. They've only played five games. The Diamondbacks have played 10. The Phillies are 1-2. They've only played three games. The Diamondbacks have played 10. Both of those teams are ahead of Arizona with winning percentage. We're not going to see everybody play 60 games. So it's going to come down to winning percentage. So you lose your opportunities to make up ground because these teams might play 50 games.
Yeah. The thing not working in the favor of the Arizona Diamondbacks is the schedule. Three against the Astros, and then, what, another three-game series against the San Diego Padres?
Yes, who are so good right now.
Worked them over real good in the opening weekend of the series. I mean, the schedule now, this time a week from now, depending on how these next six games go, against this part of this could be an entirely different conversation you and I are having about the Diamondbacks, because by then you're going to be closer to a third of the way, almost a half of the way through, not quite a half, but you're going to be a third of the way through your season. And at that point, we might be able to make some determinations about who they are and what they're capable of doing if they don't do something seriously good in the next six games or so.
I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere if you lose the games that Bumgarner and Robbie Ray pitch in. And right now, they're 0-4 in those games that those guys have pitched. You're not going anywhere unless you win those games.
Suns, probably not making the NBA playoffs this year, even though this 2-0 start's been tremendous. But last night, and so far every game they've played inside the bubble, has highlighted how important it has been just for them to be there. And we'll explain why next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Welcome back to the Burns and Gambo Show on this Monday afternoon. I hope everybody had a good, safe weekend, stayed cool in the heat and all of that. And I hope you enjoyed the Suns game last night, because I know we did. 2-0 so far in the bubble. And as we've talked about earlier, a long, long way to go if they are to do what was seemingly impossible and claim that final playoff spot in the West. But so far, early on in the bubble, everything that has needed to happen has happened for the Phoenix Suns in terms of the other teams, in terms of themselves. Big game about to start right now. Memphis and Ja Morant versus the Pelicans and Zion Williamson.
They're going to get help. This is a win-lose scenario. They're going to win in one way. They're going to lose in another. These are two teams that are ahead of you. You got to be within four of Memphis. So if Memphis wins, that hurts. But you also have to pass New Orleans. You know, so you may want Memphis to win so you can pass New Orleans. If New Orleans win, it keeps you within four of Memphis. I don't know who to root for in this game.
You know who the Phoenix Suns think you should root for?
Who?
The Phoenix Suns think Memphis? You should root for Memphis. They sent out like a one sheet, we call it in the industry, just a little handy-dandy guide for tomorrow's game. And it included a rooting guide for the games in the next 24 hours.
What was their logic to rooting for Memphis?
Didn't say.
Because then Memphis pulls more than four games ahead of you.
But then you leapfrog New Orleans.
You can pass New Orleans.
You can pass New Orleans.
And
it goes from four teams that you have to jump to three teams that you have to jump.
But if you could jump three teams, if Memphis ends up going on a run here.
Sure, of course.
You've got to be within four of Memphis.
All of this is fun to talk about. But the truth of the matter is, the real benefit of last night, and in general how the Suns have played since they've been to Orlando, is exactly what Monty Williams said after last night's game. Wins like they had last night against Dallas, it's exactly why they wanted to be a part of the bubble in Orlando.
Like I just told them, this was what I wanted to experience in this bubble, was something like this, where we just had our backs against the wall and across the board, we got efforts from everybody. Even though we didn't make the smartest plays tonight in the first half, in the second half, that third quarter, we won 36-19. And it was just will.
Bobby Marks, NBA insider, we've had him on the show many times, tweeted out this morning, three games into the seeding games, and I already feel that there is a huge player development advantage for teams like Phoenix.
100%.
And Washington.
Not even close.
And San Antonio.
Yep.
Versus the eight teams that were not invited. It's hard to replicate game action like this in an empty gym.
You sent me a tweet. I don't know. Matt Peterson?
Yes, Matt Peterson's an NBA.com writer.
Okay, I don't know him.
Used to live here in Phoenix. I only know him through social media because he's a big Suns fan. We chat with each other every now and then.
For the first time in 6 years, the Suns won a game that kind of sort of maybe mattered. He's right.
He's absolutely right. He's
100% right. For the first time in six years, the Suns won a game that kind of sort of maybe mattered.
Yeah.
The Suns are playing this game these games like they matter. The eight teams that didn't make it to the bubble are sitting at home twiddling their thumbs. They're playing Fortnite. Or NBA 2K, or maybe the Nintendo Switch that I just got my kids. They're not playing basketball. The Suns are playing games that they're coaching, they're developing, they're building chemistry. Like, I said this from the get-go. The biggest win for the Suns was just getting into this, being one of the 22 teams. Because in previous years, they never would have been invited. They wouldn't have been good enough.
Sure.
So just getting here. Now, you give the organization credit because they took it serious. They didn't come in being like, man, I'm going to opt out. This is stupid. There's no reason to play.
Sure.
They didn't come in like, hey, we're going to sit. I'm going to sit Devin Booker because I don't want him to get hurt. Because this, you look at Orlando. Jonathan Isaacs got hurt, okay?
Tore his ACL.
Yeah. The new season starts in 4 months. Okay. Less than 4 months.
Yeah.
he's not going to be ready.
He's going to be out for almost that entire new season.
Right.
Yes.
So, but the Suns didn't come in with that mindset of, I want to rest guys, I don't want guys to get hurt. We're coming in to play.
Yeah.
And we're coming in to win.
Yeah, and that's why Monty said, I wanted to be a part of this, so we could give ourselves the opportunity to have a moment like this. Because that was, I mean, like he said it again today, man. He goes, we're in this bubble, and we're totally isolated. I hope fans back there in Phoenix can see how badly we want this.
I hope our fans are excited about, you know, the level of intensity that we're playing with, the grit, the toughness. Different guys stepping up that third quarter last night around the 7-minute mark when JC and Cam and Dario and Frank and those guys off the bench just gave us life. You know, I'm hopeful that our fans can see how hard we're playing and how bad we want it.
And you know what? Matt is absolutely right. Even though I heard Bickley Murata talk about this, it is hard to quantify what a game that kind of, sort of, maybe matters looks like.
That was it.
We haven't had any of those in 6 years around here. We haven't. We have not had games.
So we've had games where you wanted them to lose to benefit their draft position.
As far as I
can
tell.
Not games that you wanted them to win.
The last time we had games around here that kind of, sort of, maybe mattered.
Hornacek.
Was the end of Hornacek's first year.
Yeah.
When they were within two games of a playoff spot, they won 48 games. Okay, that's the 6 years that Matt's referring to. And if you compare, and I understand context matters here, but in the 6 years since that moment, they haven't. They haven't. Devin Booker has never played in a game that meant as much as last night did in his professional NBA career. Think about that for a minute, right? I mean, he's had big moments on stages. He's been in the All-Star game and 70 against Boston. And
which meant nothing.
He's scored plenty. Okay, last night's game, if you're talking about the context of trying to stay in this race and trying to get a play-in tournament, it meant something. It truly meant something. Because if they lose that game last night, there's not any excitement for the team right now. And, oh, okay, it's not like it is now. Not like it is today.
Now, if they,
that game meant something.
Listen, if they lose their next two games and they're – look, it's very likely that they will play a few games in this bubble that don't have any meaning.
Sure.
And at that point, it'll be a different feeling than right now. Right now, every fan came into this like 7-1, 8-0. And okay, it's far-fetched.
Yes.
But it was hope. There is going to be a time, very likely, I believe, that they would be playing the last few games with no hope to get in. Now, if that happens, what is our mindset? What is their mindset? Can Monty keep them focused? Can Monty keep them? I mean, you heard Ricky Rubio on with us just a short time ago saying, obviously, our first goal is the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, our goal is the playoffs. And they came into this knowing that if they went on a tear, then they had a chance to get in. But once that's taken away from them and they don't have a chance to get in, do we view the games the same way? Do they view the same game? Do they still play as hard to win those games? I want to see that, because in changing the culture of the organization, it is very much about playing to win all the games you play in, whether you're going to the playoffs or not.
Yeah, and if I'm to believe in Monty Williams changing the culture, then I have to believe that, because you're right, inevitably they will be playing games that probably don't matter. I have to believe that Monty will treat those games like they matter because of the culture that he's trying to change and the attitude he's trying to set forth. But make no mistake, last night's game was not one of those games. Last night's game mattered. Last night's game was important. Last night's game, I mean, the Suns, you heard Ricky, like you referenced Ricky a second ago. During our conversation, Ricky said, yeah, of course we're looking at the scores of these other games. Of course we're watching to see what the Grizzlies do and what the Pelicans do and the Spurs and the Kings and the – of course. We know exactly what we have to do. We know exactly what they have to do to help us do what we want to do. And in the context of all of that, last night's game was a big deal for the Phoenix Suns. They were down 15. They were toast. And if they lose that game, if you think they have to go 8-0 to get in, even if they can get in at 7-1, last night's game might have been the only game they could have lost in the bubble in order to get there. They didn't lose it. They found a way to win it. That was huge. That was a huge moment for the team.
And listen, even if you get eliminated with 2, 3, 8, whatever, the more by winning these first two games, they're going to practice harder.
Yep.
Their minds are right.
Yep.
They're going into this Clipper game and it's like, we got to win. We have a chance. We got to win. 6 games left. Go 5-1. And maybe you give yourself a decent chance to get in if you could do that. But at least for them, it's by winning those first two. Now the third one matters.
Yeah.
And if they can win that one, then the fourth one matters. And that's important for a team trying to develop.
And none of this would have happened if they weren't invited to go to the bubble, which we're all grateful that they were. When we come back,
they earned that.
They did.
They earned it.
He is expected to take the Arizona Cardinals offense to the next level this season. How has this coronavirus pandemic hindered the relationship between DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray? You'll hear what the Cardinals wide receiver had to say on the topic coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. It was just a picture. It was just a photograph, and one that probably hasn't already been photoshopped 1,000 times since the Arizona Cardinals traded for DeAndre Hopkins back in March. And yet, there was a very visceral reaction. And I don't know if you were on social media at any
What's that
point
word
this
mean?
Weekend? Visceral, emotional. Like a very passionate, it's
a very emotional response.
Yeah, very, very emotional response.
What was the word?
Visceral.
Visceral.
Visceral. V-I-S-C-E-R-A-L. A-L or something like that.
I could promise you that in my 53 years of life, I've never once used that word. I've never once written that word or said that word.
I've used it on the show before. I'm sure. It's one of, enjoy that. Oh, yes, absolutely.
I have no idea what that means, and I've never used it because I don't know what it means.
I think it just goes to show how often you actually listen to me on the show. I know I've used it before.
Visceral?
I've used the word visceral on the show before. Yes,
we'll
I have.
Wow. We'll do a word of the day for you, Gambo. How about that?
Sounds like a cream when you've got achy joints.
Oh, gosh.
You try some visceral. It'll make you feel better with that arthritis you have. Visceral, recommended by doctors.
I've used it before, so I appreciate you listening to my half of the Burns and Gambo show. I appreciate it. Thank
I
you.
Don't know that word.
Thank you for paying attention. The DeAndre Hopkins officially got into the building on Saturday. He had cleared all of his pandemic tests that he had to take. He was cleared. He got in, and the players were taking part in a media day on Saturday and Sunday where they were taking photographs of them in uniforms that can be used during broadcasts, right? And so the Cardinals themselves tweeted out pictures of Hopkins in his uniform for the first time, and they were going nuts on social media. Oh, there it is. There it is.
It's real.
There's Hopkins.
My God, it really happened.
Right? Yeah, in the uniform. Yeah. And he even said, he went so far as to say, and this was from a Zoom call today, the new Cardinal receiver said he got chills putting on the Cardinals uniform for the first time.
Felt great. Felt good. Gave me chills. Not going to lie, man. It felt real good to be part of a great organization. And, the Cardinal red and white and black look good on me, if I do say so myself.
All right, so that was from a press conference today. Obviously, training camp's going to be a little different this year. They're doing strength and conditioning and walkthroughs right now. They won't head out to State Farm Stadium until, what, August 9th? So that's 6 days from now to start what we consider to be actual training camp. So how does he develop chemistry with Kyler Murray in a circumstance like that?
I think I will have time to develop chemistry with Kyler. Kyler going to his second year, obviously, is advanced in this offense. Other guys also. Last year was the first year of a lot of people being in this offense. And you can tell just from the first day that, I wasn't here, but just from hearing guys, we're far advanced than where we were this point last year. So I think, obviously, he's matured in this offense. I'm new to it, but he's doing a good job of keeping me up to par with things and also the other guys around me. But I think we will have time to develop chemistry.
You think they're going to have time?
Not as much as normal. But Kyle's not a rookie. He's a veteran. He's more of a veteran now, right? He's got a year under his belt. So I think that's a benefit. Hopkins, a lot of times you have a player like that, it's just putting the ball up and letting him go get it because mm-hmm. he's that talented. I think that a lot of the chemistry will happen over the course of the first month of the season.
Yeah.
Over the games.
It's funny. That I think will almost become the new preseason.
is the first four games of the season.
Even though they count, and even though they will count in the standings, I think the first four games of the regular season, the starters will play. They won't treat it like preseason games where they bench the starters by halftime. The starters will play the whole game. But in terms of chemistry, feel, what works, what doesn't, I think you're going to see a lot of experimenting those first four games, and I think you're going to see a lot of getting to know you when it comes to DeAndre Hopkins, Kyler Murray, new faces, how it's all going to work, incorporating Kenyon Drake for a full season. I think you're going to see a lot of experimenting in the first three or four games of the regular season. Absolutely.
You know, the key is that the offensive line is back intact outside of AQ, who's being replaced by Mason Cole. The offensive line is intact. A couple of new additions for depth, but I think that will be a benefit to helping those guys develop.
Hopkins today also talked about the chemistry that he'd like to build with Kyler Murray on and off the field.
It's not just on the field, but off the field. Us communicating, texting each other, calling each other, and just building a camaraderie of, something that is going to last for a long time, not just, while we're playing football, but after football. But my expectations is us becoming best friends and doing everything together because I have to be on the same page with my quarterback no matter what for us to be successful as a team, not just him and I. But, Kyler has done a great job of leading and helping me, kind of get up to speed with what's going on with the playbook and everything. So, I think we're off to a good start.
You're going to be best friends?
Best friends.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep. Best friend.
I knew Jordan had that stepbrother's cut just waiting to go. I'm not even back there to see
you
it.
Think of that? I think of the courtship of Eddie's father.
Well, that's
people. Let me tell you about my best friend. You remember that TV show?
Yes, I do.
The courtship of Eddie's father with Bill Bixby.
I'm more inclined to think of stepbrothers.
Stepbrothers,
with John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell. That's me. That's you. That's kind of how we work. But yeah, I figured that's where Jordan was going with that. Best friends, ready to go now. Now, DeAndre Hopkins was also asked a question about whether he has considered or whether he did consider opting out of this season because we continue to see players opt out around the NFL.
That would have sucked.
The deadline, now I'm reading the deadline might be Thursday or Friday of this
Trying
week.
To move it up.
Yeah. That's,
so less guys opt out.
Here's Hopkins on that point.
I play football for a living, but I'm also a family man, for a living. And hopefully it doesn't have to come to that, but I take it day by day. I think in the present moment, not the future. So, I take things day by day. But, seeing guys opt out, I see a lot of guys getting criticism for it. And I feel bad for those guys because obviously they're losing a lot of money by opting out. But to those people, they don't want to risk what can happen. And you can't blame them. But for myself, I take it day by day, and I really don't look, past that.
I just wonder if they're going to get a new contract done between now and the start of the season. I think that they want to. I think it's difficult because they don't know what the cap's going to be. And that's why it makes it really hard to do a new deal. But I think both sides want to get a deal done, and I think if there's some certainty about what the cap will be, more certainty about that, then I think it's getting closer to being – 100% finalized, and then I think something could get done.
Yeah, I mean, and we've seen so many guys opt out. C.J. Mosley over the weekend opted out. And this has probably changed, honestly. Field Yates this morning tweeted out that a total of 43 NFL players have already opted out of this season, and I think there have been more even since he sent that. I'll be curious to see about the new contract for Hopkins, too, because we know the salary cap next year won't go any lower than 175.
Right.
That's the floor. So can you make a new deal for him operating off of that principle? I don't know.
But what do you need to know that it's going to be higher,
right,
the cap?
I don't know the answer to that question. A couple other quick Cardinal notes here. Number one, two players, both starting offensive linemen, Marcus Gilbert and tight end Max Williams, have been put on the active non-football illness list. They have not been reported as testing positive for COVID-19, so we don't know exactly what it is they're dealing with. It's not a football-related injury. That's why they're on the non-football illness list. But they are on that list, and they might be on that list for a while. This is their starting right tackle and their starting tight end, presumably going into the season. The Arizona Cardinals, keep in mind, haven't had a single player opt out so far.
Nope, no
and
COVID
so
issues.
Far, no COVID issues. Yeah. No player to test positive, at least none that we know about, and these things are generally being reported. We haven't heard anything from the Cardinals.
Maybe 120 degrees does kill the virus.
Well, maybe, or maybe we just haven't heard about it yet. I don't know, but those are two Cardinals that are not going to be with the team right away, but not necessarily for the reasons that everybody thinks. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it didn't look great at halftime last night, but the Suns come from behind win over the Mavericks as the Valley buzzing. And we'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo show.